I would imagine that he looks upon Kalzakath as little more than a minor irritation.
Torax, teeth,
Urgot swore. Where am I going to get the troops that I need? Hire mercenaries, Silk suggested, without turning from the window where he stood.
What?
Dip into the royal vaults and bring out some of the fabled red gold of Angrak. Send word into the kingdoms of the West that you need good men, and that you're willing to pay them very good gold. You would be swamped with volunteers.
I prefer men who fight for patriotism or religion,
Urgot declared stiffly. Silk turned with an amused expression. I've noticed that preference in many kings, he observed. It doesn't put such a strain on royal treasuries. But believe me, Your Majesty, loyalty to an ideal can vary in its intensity. But loyalty to money never changes. That's why mercenaries are better fighters.
You are a cynic,
Urgot accused. Silk shook his head. No, Your Majesty, I'm a realist. He stepped over to Tzadi and murmured something. The eunuch nodded, and the rat-faced little Drasmian quietly left the room. Urgot raised one eyebrow inquiringly.
He's going to go start packing, Your Majesty, Tzadi explained. If we are going to sail tomorrow, we need to start getting ready.
Urgot and Tzadi talked quietly for about a quarter of an hour. Then the door at the far end of the room opened again. Polgara and the other ladies entered with the Lady Tamazin.
Oh, good morning, Mother,
Urgot greeted her.
You slept well, I trust?
Quite well, thank you.
She looked critically at him.
Urgot, where is your crown?
I took it off. It gives me a headache.
Put it back on at once.
What for?
Urgot, you don't look very much like a king. You are short and thin, and you've got a face like a weasel. Murgos are not bright. If you don't wear your crown all of the time, it is altogether possible that they will forget who you are. Now put it back on.
Yes, Mother.
He picked up his crown and clapped it on his head.
How's that?
It is lopsided, dear,
she said in a calm tone, so familiar that Geryon gave Polgara a quick, startled look.
Now you look like a drunken sailor.
Urgot laughed and straightened his crown. Geryon looked closely at Tenedra to see if there were any traces left of the storm of weeping that had swept over her the previous day, but he saw no evidence that it might immediately return. She was engaged in a murmured conversation with the Ktan princess, Prala, and the Murgul girl's face clearly showed that she had already fallen under the queen's spell.
And you, Urgot,
Lady Tamazin said,
did you sleep well?
I never really sleep, Mother, you know that. I decided years ago that sleeping nervously is infinitely preferable to sleeping permanently.
Geryon found himself making a difficult readjustment in his thinking. He had never liked Murgos. He had always distrusted and even feared them. King Urgot's personality, however, was as un-Murgoish as his appearance. He was quick and volatile, and his moods swung from sardonic amusement to gloom so rapidly that Geryon was quite uncertain what to expect next. He was obviously not a strong king, and Geryon had been a king long enough himself to see where Urgot was making his mistakes. In spite of himself, though, Geryon found that he actually liked him, and felt a peculiar sympathy for him as he struggled with a job for which he was hopelessly unsuited. That, of course, created a problem. Geryon did not want to like this man, and this unwanted sympathy seemed wildly out of place. He rose from his chair and withdrew to the far end of the room, making some pretense of looking out the window so that he might put himself beyond the range of the Murgul King's urbane wit. With a kind of unbearable urgency, he wanted to be on board ship and away from this ugly Murgo city, huddled on this barren coast and from the weak, fearful man who was not really such a bad fellow, but whom Geryon knew he should regard as an enemy.
"What is the trouble, Geryon?"
Polgara asked quietly, coming up behind him.
"Impatience, I guess, Aunt Paul. I want to get moving."
"We all do, dear. But we have to endure this for one more day."
Why can't he just leave us alone?
Who's that, dear?
Urgot. I'm not interested in his problems. So why does he have to sit around telling us about them all of the time?
Because he is lonely, Geryon.
All kings are lonely. It comes with the crown. Most of us just learn how to endure it. We don't sit around and snivel about it.
That is unkind, Geryon, and it is unworthy of you.
Why are we all so concerned about a weak king with a clever mouth?
Perhaps it is because he is the first Murgo we have met in aeons who shows some human qualities. Because he is the way he is, he raises the possibility that Aelorns and Murgos might someday find ways to settle their differences without resorting to bloodshed.
He continued to stare out of the window, although a slow flush began to creep up his neck.
I am being childish, aren't I?
Yes, dear. I am afraid you are. Your prejudices are running away with you. Ordinary people can afford that. Kings cannot. Go back to where he is sitting, Geryon. Watch him closely. Do not pass up this opportunity to get to know him. The time may come when that knowledge will help you.
All right, Aunt Paul,
Geryon sighed, squaring his shoulders resolutely. It was almost noon when Oskotat entered the room.
Your Majesty,
he announced in his rasping voice.
Ugachek, Hierarch of Rak Uga, craves audience with you. Show him in, Oskotat,
Urgot replied wearily. He turned toward his mother.
I think I'm going to have to find another place to hide, he muttered. Too many people know where to find me.
I have a splendid closet, Urgot. Warm and dry and dark. You could hide in there and cover yourself with a blanket. We will slip food into you from time to time.
Are you making fun of me, mother?
No, dear. But like it or not, you are the king. You can either be the king or you can be a spoiled child. The choice is entirely up to you.
Geryon glanced guiltily at Polgara.
Yes,
she murmured. But he decided not to answer. The cadaverous-looking Agachak entered and bowed perfunctorily.
Your Majesty,
he said in his hollow voice.
Dread Hierarch,
Urgot responded, his voice betraying no hint of his true feeling.
Time is passing, Your Majesty. It has a way of doing that, I have noticed. My point is that the weather is about to turn stormy. Is the ship nearly ready? I expect it to sail tomorrow,
Urgot replied.
Excellent. I shall instruct Kabach to make ready. Has the priestess Kabat regained her composure?
Urgot asked.
Not really, Your Majesty. She still keenly fears the loss of her paramour. Even after she found out what his true feelings were about her? Who can ever hope to understand the workings of the female mind? Kabat is not that difficult to fathom, Your Majesty.
Agachak shrugged.
A disfigured woman has little chance to attract lovers, and the loss of even an insincere one is most painful. Her loss in this particular case goes a bit deeper, however. Sorchak assisted her in the performance of certain rites of magic. Without him, she will not be able to continue her efforts to summon up demons.
Urgot shuddered.
I thought that she was a sorceress. Is that not enough for her? Why would she want to dabble in magic too? Kabat is not really that powerful of a sorceress,
Agachak replied.
She thinks that she will have a greater advantage when she finally confronts me, if she has demons to aid her.
Confront you? Is that what she is planning?
Of course. Her occasional dallying is merely an amusement. Her central goal has always been power. In time, she will have to try to wrest mine from me.
If that is the case, why did you allow her to gain so much authority in the temple?
It amused me,"
Agachek said with a chill smile.
"I am not as repelled by ugliness as others are. And Kavat, despite her ambition, or perhaps because of it, is very efficient."
"You knew about her affair with Sorchak? Did that not offend you?"
"Not really," the dead-looking hierarch answered. "That is just part of the entertainment that I am preparing for myself. Eventually, Kavat will succeed in raising a demon. Then she will challenge me. At the very instant that her triumph seems complete, I shall also raise a demon, and mine will destroy hers. Then I shall have her stripped and dragged to the sanctum. There, she will be bent backward across the altar, and I myself will slowly cut out her heart. I look forward to that moment with a great deal of anticipation, and it will be all the sweeter because it will come just when she thinks she has beaten me."
His dead face had come alive with a dreadful pleasure. His eyes burned, and there were flecks of spittle in the corners of his mouth. Urgot, however, looked faintly sick.
"Golems appear to have more exotic amusements than ordinary men." "Not really, Urgot. The only reason for power is to be able to use it to destroy your enemies. And it is particularly enjoyable to be able to drag them down from a height before you destroy them. Wouldn't you like to be present when the mighty Kalzakath dies with a Dagashi knife in his heart?"
"Not really. I just want him out of the way. I don't particularly want to watch the procedure."
"You have not yet learned the true meaning of power. The understanding may come when you and I stand in the presence of Tragsardius and witness the rebirth of the Dark God and the final triumph of the Child of Dark."
Urgot's expression grew pained.
"Do not flinch from your destiny, Urgot,"
Agachak continued in his hollow voice.
"It is foretold that the king of Angarak will be present at the final meeting. You will be that king, just as I will be the one to make the sacrifice and thus become the first disciple of the reborn god. We are bound together by a chain of forged fate. Your destiny is to become overking of Angarak, and mine to rule the church."
Urgot sighed in resignation.
"Whatever you say, Agachek. We still have a few problems to overcome, however."
"They are of little concern to me."
"Well, they do concern me,"
Urgot said with surprising heat.
"First we have to deal with Zakath. Then we will need to get rid of Gethel and Drosta, just to be on the safe side. I have been involved in a race for a throne before, and I think I'd be more confident if I were the only one running. Your problems, however, are a bit more weighty. Ervan and Zandramas are very serious opponents."
"Ervan is a doddering old fool. And Zandramas is only a woman."
"Agachak," Urgot said pointedly, "Polgara is also only a woman. Would you care to face her?" "No, Dread Hierarch. I think that Ervan does not dodder as much as you think, and Zandramas is probably more dangerous than you'd like to believe. She has managed to spirit away Belgarian's son, and that was no mean trick. She also slipped past you and all of the other Hierarchs as if you weren't even here. Let's neither of us take any of this too lightly."
"I know where Zandramas is,"
Agachuk said with a chill smile. "And I will wrest Belgarion's son from her at the proper time. It is foretold that you and I and the babe who is to be sacrificed will come into the presence of the Tsardian at that appointed time. There, I will perform the sacrifice, and you will witness the rite, and we shall both be exalted. It is so written."
"Depending upon how you read it,"
Urgot added morosely. Geryon moved to Tenedra's side, trying to look casual. As the meaning of what the Grolem Hierarch had just said came to her, the blood slowly drained from her face.
"It's not going to happen,"
he told her in a firm, quiet voice.
"Nobody's going to do that to our baby."
"You knew,"
she accused him in a choked whisper.
"Grandfather and I found it out in the Grolem prophecies in the temple library."
"Oh, Geryon,"
she said, biting her lip to keep back the tears.
"Don't worry about it," he said. "The same prophecy said that Torak was going to win at Tol Mishrak. That didn't happen, and this isn't going to happen either."
"But what if..."
"There are not any ifs. It's not going to happen." After the Hierarch had left, King Urgot's mood changed. He sat in his chair, brooding sourly.
"Perhaps your majesty might prefer to be left alone," Zadi ventured.
"No, Zadi," Urgot sighed. "No amount of worrying at it is going to change what we have already set in motion."
He shook his head, then shrugged as if dismissing the whole matter.
"Why don't you tell me the details of this little misdemeanor that made Salmisra so vexed with you? I adore stories of deceit and dishonesty. They always seem to hint that the world's not really such a bad place, after all."
It was not long after, as Saadi was elaborating at some length on the involuted scheme that had caused his downfall, when the Seneschal entered the room again.
"A dispatch has arrived from the military governor at Taha, your majesty," he rasped.
"What does he want now?"
Urgot muttered.
"He reports that the Malorians are mounting a major campaign in the south. Rak Gorot is under siege and must inevitably fall within a week."
"In the autumn?"
Urgot exclaimed, coming up out of his chair in dismay.
"They're mounting a campaign when the summer is already over?"
"So it appears," Oskatat replied. "I think that Karzakath is hoping to take you by surprise. Once Rak Gorot falls, there won't be anything between his forces and Rak Taha."
"And the garrison there is virtually non-existent, isn't it?"
"I am afraid so. Rak Taha will also fall, Urgot, and then Zakath will have all winter to consolidate his hold on the south."
Urgot began to swear and moved quickly to a map tacked up on the wall.
"How many troops do we have up here in Month?"
he demanded, tapping the map with one finger.
"A few score thousand. But by the time they had received the order to march south, the Malorians would already be halfway to Rakhtaka."
Urgot stared in consternation at the map. Then he suddenly smashed his fist against it.
"He has outsmarted me again,"
he raged. He returned to his chair and collapsed into it.
"I think I had better go get Craddock," Oskatat said. "The general staff will need to know about this."
"Whatever you think best, Oskatat,"
Urgot replied in a defeated tone. As the Seneschal strode from the room, Geryon crossed to look at the map. Only the briefest of glances told him a solution to Urgot's problem. But he was reluctant to speak. He did not want to become involved in this. There were a dozen good reasons why he should keep his mouth shut, the most important being the fact that should he offer his solution to the Murgo King, he would, in a sense, be committed, and he firmly desired to avoid any commitment to the man, no matter how slight. An unresolved problem, however, nagged at his sense of responsibility. To turn his back on one, even one that was not his own, violated something deep within him. He muttered a curse under his breath, then turned to the stricken Urgot. "Excuse me, Your Majesty," he said, approaching the matter obliquely. "But how well fortified is Rakdaka?"
"It's like every Murgo city,"
Urgot replied abstractedly.
"The walls are 70 feet high and 30 feet thick. What difference does it make?"
"The city could withstand a siege, then, if you had enough men there?"
"That's the whole problem, I don't."
"Then you need to get reinforcements there before the Malorians can reach the city."
"What a brilliant observation. But if I can't get relief columns there in time, how could I possibly get reinforcements there before the streets are filled with Malorians?"
Garion shrugged. "Send them by sea."
"By sea?"
Urgot suddenly looked stunned. "Your harbor is full of ships, and your city's bulging with troops. Load enough men on the ships to reinforce the garrison at Rakdaka and sail them around to the city. Even if Rakkarut fell tomorrow, it's still going to take the Malorians 10 days to march overland. Your ships could be there in less than a week. Your reinforced garrison will be able to hold until the relief columns arrive." Urgot shook his head.
"Murgo armies do not move by ship. My generals would not hear of it."
"You are the king, aren't you? Make them hear it." Urgot's face grew apprehensive.
"They never listen to me."
Garion had a sudden urge to shake him. With some effort, he got his irritation under control. "There's nothing holy about walking, particularly if marching your men to Rakdaka is going to cost you the city. Tell your generals to load the men on those ships and also tell them that the matter is not open to discussion."
"They will refuse."
"Then dismiss them from their posts and promote a few colonels." Urgot stared at him aghast.
"I couldn't do that."
"You are the king. You can do anything you want to." Urgot wrestled with it indecisively.
"Do as he says, Urgot,"
Lady Tamazin commanded abruptly.
"It's the only way to save Rakdaka."
He looked at her, a lost expression on his face.
"Do you really think I should, Mother?"
he asked in a small voice.
"Just do it. As the young man said, you are the king. And I think it is about time that you started acting like one."
"There's something else we need to consider, Your Majesty," Thuddy said, his face grave. "If the Malorians lay siege to Rakdaka, I won't be able to land there. I am going to have to get past that vicinity before any fighting breaks out. Slavers can move around with very little interference, unless there's an actual battle going on. But once the fighting starts, the Malorians are sure to detain us if we don't move very quickly. Your Dagashi won't reach Rakdaka until sometime next summer."
Urgot's face grew even more disconsolate.
"I had not considered that," he admitted. "I think you and your people had better get ready to leave here immediately. I will send word to the temple and tell Agachak that the plans have changed."
The door opened, Oskatat entered, and at his side was the Murgo officer who had so rudely demanded Urgot's signature the previous day.
"Ah, General Craddock!"
Urgot greeted the officer with an obviously feigned joviality.
"So good of you to join us. You have heard about what's going on in the south?"
The general nodded shortly. "The situation is grave. Rakkarut and Rakdaka are in great peril."
"What do you advise, General?"
"There's nothing to advise. We will have to accept the fact that Garut and Taka are lost and concentrate our efforts on holding Urga, Murgth, and Raga."
"General, that only leaves 3 of the 9 military districts of Tol Murgos under my control. Zakath is eating my kingdom one bite at a time."
The general shrugged.
"We cannot reach Rakdaka before the Malorians do. The city will fall. There is nothing we can do about it."
"What if we were to reinforce the garrison? Would that change things?"
"Certainly, but it is impossible."
"Maybe not,"
Urgot said, with a quick look at Garion.
"What do you think of moving reinforcements there by ship?"
By ship?
The general blinked. Then his face hardened.
That is absurd.
Why absurd?
It has never been done in Kthul Murgos before.
I imagine that there are a lot of things that have never been done in Kthul Murgos before. Is there any specific reason why it won't work?
Ships sink, Your Majesty,
Craddock pointed out acidly, as if speaking to a child.
The troops know that, and they will refuse to go on board.
Oskatat stepped forward.
Not if you'll crucify the first 10 or so who refuse right there on the dock, he said firmly. That sort of example should lessen the reluctance of the rest.
Craddock gave the gray-haired man a look of undisguised hatred.
What would a house servant know about command?
He demanded. He looked back at Urgot with a barely concealed sneer.
Just stay on your throne, Urgot. Play with your crown and your scepter, and pretend that you are a real king, but keep your nose out of the business of running the war.
Urgot's face blanched, and he shrank back onto his chair.
Shall I send for the headsman, Your Majesty?
Oskatet inquired in an icy voice.
It appears that General Craddock has outlived his usefulness.
Craddock stared at him incredulously.
You wouldn't dare!
Your life hangs on His Majesty's pleasure just now, Craddock. One word from him and your head will roll in the dust.
I am a general officer in the armies of Kthul Murgos.
Craddock clutched at the gold chain about his neck as if for reassurance.
My appointment comes from Tar Urgos himself. You have no authority over me, Oskatet.
Urgot straightened in his chair, an angry flush moving up into his face.
Oh, really?
He said dangerously.
Maybe it is time that we get a few things clarified.
He took off his crown and held it up.
Do you recognize this, Craddock?
The general glared at him with a stony face.
Answer me.
It is the crown of Kthul Murgos,
Craddock replied sullenly.
And the man who wears it has absolute authority, right?
Tar Urgos did.
Tar Urgos is dead. I sit upon the throne now, and you will obey me in the same way you obeyed him. Do you understand?
You are not Tar Urgos.
That is painfully obvious, General Craddock,
Urgot replied coldly.
I am your king, however, and I am also an Urga. When I grow agitated, I feel the madness of the Urgas creeping up on me, and it is creeping up very fast just now. If you don't do exactly as I tell you to do, you are going to be a head shorter before the sun sets. Now go give the order to load the troops onto those ships.
And if I refuse?
Urgot's expression grew hesitant. For some reason, he looked appealingly to Geryon. Kill him, Geryon said, in the flat, unemotional voice he had discovered immediately got people's attention. Urgot straightened again and firmly yanked his bell pull. The great gong outside the hallway clanged. Two burly guards responded immediately.
Is Your Majesty?
One of them asked.
Well, Craddock? Urgot asked. What's it to be? The ships or the block? Speak up, man, I haven't got all day.
Craddock's face went ashen.
The ships, Your Majesty?
He replied in a shaky voice.
Splendid. I am so happy we were able to settle our little differences without unpleasantness.
Urgot turned to his guards.
General Craddock is going directly to the barracks of the 3rd cohort now. And you will accompany him. He is going to order those men to board the ships in the harbor and to sail to the relief of the garrison at Rakthacha.
He gave Craddock a narrow, distrustful look.
If he gives them any other order, you will cut off his head immediately and bring it to me in a basket.
As Your Majesty commands,
the Murgos replied in unison, each banging his fist against his mail shirt. Craddock turned, trembling and suddenly broken, and went out with the grim Murgo guards flanking him closely. Urgot retained his imperious expression until the door closed. Then he threw both arms in the air and began beating his feet on the floor, whooping with delight.
Oh, gods! I loved that! I've been waiting to do that all of my life!
The Lady Tamazin rose gravely from her chair, limped to where her son sat, and wordlessly embraced him.
"Affection, mother?"
he asked lightly, a broad grin still creasing his sharp-featured face.
"Oh, terribly un-Murgo-ish."
And then he laughed and caught her in a rough bear hug.
"There may be hope, after all,"
she observed calmly to Oskatat. A slow smile crept across the big Murgo's lips.
"It looks a bit more promising, my lady,"
he agreed.
"Thank you for your support, Oskatat," Urgot said to his friend. "I might not have gotten through that without your help. I must say, though, that I am a little surprised that you approved of my scheme."
"I don't. I think it is an absurd idea, almost certainly doomed from the start."
Urgot blinked.
"There was another issue at stake, however. One that is much more important."
There was a peculiar pride on the big man's face.
"Do you realize that this is the very first time that you have ever faced down one of your generals? They have been running through roughshod over you since the day you took the throne. The loss of a few ships and a few thousand men is a small price to pay for a real king on the throne of Khol Murgos."
"Thank you for your candor, Oskatad," Urgot said gravely. "It may just be, though, that things may not turn out so disastrously as you think."
"Perhaps, but Tower Urgos would not have done this."
"It might just be that someday we will all rejoice in the fact that Tower Urgos is no longer with us, Oskatat."
A faint ironic smile crossed the king's lips now.
"As a matter of fact, I seem to feel a small surge of rejoicing coming over me already. I'm losing this war, my old friend, and a man who is losing cannot afford to be conservative. I've got to take a few gambles if I want to keep Khal Zakath from parading through the streets of Rak Urga with my head on a pole."
"As your majesty commands,"
the seneschal said with a bow.
"I am also going to have to give certain orders. Have I your permission to withdraw?"
"Of course."
Oskatat turned and started toward the door. Before he reached it, however, it opened and Silk came into the room. The seneschal stopped, staring hard at the Drasnian. Silk's hand moved swiftly toward the hood of his robe, but then he let it drop with a rueful grimace. Geryon groaned inwardly. He moved carefully into position not far behind Oskatat, aware that Durnik and the gigantic Toth were also coming up on either side of him, ready to move quickly to prevent any outcry.
"You!" Oskatat exclaimed to Silk. "What are you doing here?"
Silk's expression grew resigned.
"Just passing through, Oskatat. You've been well, I trust."
Urgot looked up.
"What is this?"
"The seneschal and I are old friends, your majesty," Silk replied. "We met in Rakgoska some years ago."
"Is your majesty aware of this man's true identity?"
Oskatat demanded. Urgot shrugged.
"He is one of Zadi's servants, or so I was told."
"Hardly that, Urgot. This is Prince Keldar of Dresnia, the most notorious spy in the entire world."
"Oh, this seneschal is perhaps a bit lavish in his praise," Silk noted modestly.
"Do you deny that you murdered the soldiers Tar Urga sent to detain you when your scheme in Rakgoska was exposed?"
Oskatat said accusingly.
"I don't know that I would use the word murdered exactly, my lord," Silk winced. "Oh, I'll admit that there was a bit of unpleasantness, but that's such an awkward way to sum it up."
"Your majesty," the grim old Murgo said, "this man was responsible for the death of Dorak Urgas, your eldest brother. There is a long-standing warrant for his immediate execution, so I will send for the headsman at once."
Chapter 15. Urgot's face had grown cold. His eyes were narrowed, and he chewed nervously on a fingernail.
"All right, Zadi. What is this all about?"
"Your majesty, I..."
The eunuch spread his hand.
"Don't try to play innocent with me," Urgot snapped. "Did you know about this man?"
He pointed at Silk.
"Well, yes, but..."
And you chose not to tell me? What is your game, Tzadi?
The eunuch hesitated, and Geryon saw beads of sweat breaking out on his forehead. Dornick and Toth moved casually, as if merely removing themselves from the vicinity of the confrontation. They went past Oskatat and leaned idly against the wall, one on each side of the door.
"Well, Tzadi,"
Urgot pressed,
"I have heard about this Prince Keldar. He's not merely a spy. He's an assassin as well."
His eyes suddenly grew wide.
"So that's it,"
he gasped, staring at Silk.
"Though Geryon sent you here to kill me, didn't he? You and these other Aelorns."
"Don't be absurd, Urgot,"
Lady Tamazin said from her chair.
"You have been alone with these people for hours at a time since they arrived here. If they were here to kill you, you would already be dead."
He thought about that.
"All right. You, Prince Keldar, speak up. I want to know exactly what you are doing here. Now talk."
Silk shrugged.
"It is as I told my Lord Oskatat, Your Majesty. I am merely passing through. My business is in another part of the world."
"Which part?"
"Oh, here and there," Silk said evasively.
"I am going to get some straight answers here," Urgot declared.
"Should I send for the headsman, Your Majesty?"
Oskatat asked ominously.
"Perhaps that might not be a bad idea," Urgot agreed.
The seneschal turned, but found Dornick and the impassive Toth barring his way from the room. Urgot, perceiving the situation at once, reached quickly for the bell pull, which would fill the room with armed Murgos.
"Urgot,"
Lady Tamazin snapped.
"No."
He hesitated.
"Do as I say." "What is this?"
he asked.
"Look around you,"
she told him.
"If you even touch that cord, one of these people will have a knife against your throat before you can tug it even once."
His expression grew suddenly frightened, and he slowly lowered his hand. Tzadi cleared his throat.
"Your Majesty, I believe that the Queen Mother has seen directly to the heart of the matter here. We are both in positions to greatly inconvenience each other. Would it not be wiser for us to discuss things rationally before we resort to any unpleasantness?"
"What is it that you want, then, Tzadi?"
Urgot asked him in a slightly quavering voice.
"Only what you had intended all along, Your Majesty. As Keldar said, our business is in another part of the world, and does not directly concern you. Give us the ship that you were going to give us anyway, and in return we will deliver your Dagashi to Rakhaga as we promised. After that, we will proceed with our own affairs. Now what could be fairer than that?"
"Listen to him, Urgot,"
Lady Tamazin urged.
"He makes a great deal of sense."
Urgot's expression was filled with doubt.
"Do you really think so, Mother?"
"What harm can they do you once they have crossed the Malorian lines? If you are nervous about them, then get them out of Rakhaga as quickly as possible."
"I'll accept this one," Oskatat pointed at Silk.
"We really need him, my lord," Tzadi said politely.
"He killed Dorak-Urgas,"
the seneschal said stubbornly.
"We can give him a medal for that later, Oskatat," Urgot said.
Oskatat stared at him.
"Oh, come now, my friend. You despised Dorak as much as I did."
"He was a Murgo prince, Your Majesty. His murder cannot go unpunished."
"You seem to forget that I murdered a dozen of my other brothers, also Murgo princes, on my way to the throne. Were you planning to punish me as well?"
Urgot looked back.
"I think, however, Tzadi, that it might not hurt for me to keep Keldar here in Drojim, sort of as a performance bond. As soon as you deliver Kabak to Rakhaga, I will release him. He can catch up with you later."
Tzadi's expression grew pained.
"You are overlooking something important here, Urgot,"
Lady Tamazin said, leaning forward intently.
Oh? And what is that, mother? Prince Keldar of Drasnia is reputed to be one of King Belgarion's closest friends. You have there the perfect envoy to convey a message to the Riven King.
He looked sharply at Silk.
Is that true? Do you really know Belgarion?
Oh, quite well, actually, Silk replied. I've known him since he was a little boy.
That old man over there said that Belgarion isn't at Riva just now. Do you have any idea where you might be able to find him?
Your Majesty, Silk answered, with a perfectly straight face. I can honestly tell you that I know exactly where Belgarion is at this very moment. Urgot scratched at one cheek, his eyes suspicious.
I don't like this. Let's say that I give you a message to deliver to Belgarion. What's to prevent you from just throwing it away, then circling around to rejoin your friends?
Ethics, Silk shrugged. I always do the things I am paid to do. You were planning to pay me, weren't you? Urgot stared at Silk for a moment, and then he threw back his head and laughed.
You are absolutely outrageous, Keldar. Here you are about 2 steps from the headsman's block, and you have the nerve to try to extort money from me?
Silk sighed and looked around tragically.
Why is it that the word pay always brings that same look of consternation into the eyes of kings the world over?
Surely your Majesty would not expect me to perform this truly unique service for you without some small recompense, would you?
Wouldn't you say that keeping your head is more than adequate payment?
Oh, I'm fairly safe, I think, since I'm the only one in the world who can guarantee delivery of your message. I'm far too valuable to kill, wouldn't you say? Lady Tamazin suddenly laughed, a whimsical expression on her face, as she looked at the two of them.
Something amusing, mother? Nothing, Urgot. Nothing at all.
The king's eyes were still indecisive. He looked hopefully at his seneschal.
What do you think, Oskatat? Can I trust this little knave?
It is your Majesty's decision, the big Murgot replied stiffly.
I'm not asking you as your king. I'm asking as a friend.
Oskatat winced.
That is cruel, Urgot. You are forcing me to decide between duty and friendship.
All right, then. Let's put it on that basis. What should I do?
As king, you should obey the law, even if it means flying in the face of your own best interests. As a man, however, you should seize every opportunity that presents itself to avert a disaster.
Well, what should I do? Should I be a king or a man? Which do you advise?
It hung there in the air between them. The seneschal refused to meet Urgot's eyes. Instead, he cast one quick appealing look at Lady Tamazin.
Hey, Torak, forgive me, he muttered finally.
He straightened and looked his king full in the face.
Save yourself, Urgot. If this Drasnian can arrange an alliance with Belgarion, then pay him whatever he demands and send him on his way. Belgarion may deceive you at some later date, but Kalzakath seeks your head now. You'll need that alliance, no matter what the cost.
Thank you, Oskatat,
the king said with genuine gratitude. He turned back to Silk.
How quickly do you think you could reach Belgarion with my message?
Your Majesty, I can have your message in Belgarion's hands more quickly than you could possibly imagine. Now, shall we talk about money? His long pointed nose began to twitch in a manner Geryon recognized at once.
How much do you want?
Oh, Silk pretended to think about it.
I suppose 100 tonedrin gold marks ought to cover it.
Urgot gasped at him.
100 marks? You're insane.
Silk casually examined the fingernails of one hand.
The figure is open to negotiation, Your Majesty. I just wanted to establish a general price range, sort of to get things off to a smooth start.
Urgot's eyes took on a strange light. He leaned forward, tugging absently at his nose.
I might be able to see my way clear to pay you 10
or so. I don't really have all that much Tolnedran coin in my vaults.
That's all right, Your Majesty, Silk said magnanimously. I'd be willing to accept Angrak coin, at a slight discount, of course.
Discount?
Angrak gold is obviously adulterated, King Urgot. That's why it's red instead of yellow.
Urgot eyed him narrowly.
Why don't you draw up a chair, old boy? This might take a while.
Strangely enough, his nose had also begun to twitch. What followed was a display of astonishing virtuosity on the part of both negotiators. Garion had seen Silk in this sort of a situation many times before, and had always believed that his sharp-nosed friend was without peer when it came to getting the best of every bargain he struck. Urgot, however, quickly demonstrated that he too was an expert at this game. When Silk pointed out in suitably exaggerated terms the dangers he would have to face on his way to deliver the message, Urgot countered by offering an escort of Murgo soldiers, rather than increasing compensation. Silk dropped that line of attack, and concentrated for a time on the unusual expenses he would incur, fresh horses, food, lodging, bribes, and the like. In each case, the Murgo King proposed assistance rather than money, horses, food, lodging at Murgo embassies or trade missions, and the good offices of Murgo officials to step around the necessity for bribes. Silk made some pretense at considering that, his watchful eyes never leaving his adversary's face. Then he fell back to his previously prepared position, re-emphasizing his friendship with the Riven King, and the fact that he, perhaps better than any man in the world, could present the proposed alliance to Belgarion in the most favorable light.
After all, he concluded, what it finally comes down to is how much the alliance is worth to you, doesn't it?
It is worth a very great deal,
Urgot admitted, with deceptive candor.
But although I would be first to admit that you are probably the perfect messenger, there's no guarantee that Belgarion will agree to an alliance now, is there?
He paused, his expression announcing that a notion had just struck him.
I will tell you what,
he said then, with an artfully feigned enthusiasm.
Why don't we set a relatively modest figure for the actual delivery of the message, let's say, the 10 marks I suggested previously?
Silk's face grew flinty, but Urgot lifted one hand.
Hear me out, Your Highness. As I suggested, we agree on that figure as a payment for carrying the message. Then if Belgarion agrees to an alliance, I would be more than happy to pay you the rest of the money you asked for.
Oh, that's hardly fair, Your Majesty, Silk protested. You're putting the entire question into the hands of a third party. I can guarantee delivery, but not acceptance. Belgarion is a sovereign king. I can't tell him what to do, and I have no way of knowing how he would react to your proposal.
Didn't you say that you were his oldest friend? Surely you know him well enough to have at least some idea of how he would view the matter.
You're shifting the entire basis of the negotiation, Your Majesty.
Yes, I know, Urgot smirked.
The payment for actually cementing an alliance between you and Belgarion would have to be much, much higher. What you propose is extremely hazardous, after all.
Hazardous? I don't follow you, old boy.
Belgarion is not entirely a free agent. Even though he's the overlord of the West, he's still answerable to the other kings, particularly the Aelons, and let's be honest about it, Aelons despise Murgos. If I persuade him to accept an alliance with you, those other Aelon kings might very well believe that I'm a traitor. I could find myself dodging their assassins for the rest of my life.
I find that very hard to believe, Galdar.
You don't know them. The Aelons are a fearfully unforgiving race. Even my aunt, who would give orders to have me hunted down if she thought that I had betrayed a basic Aelon concept of the world.
What you propose is absolutely out of the question, unless we start talking about really significant amounts of money, of course.
Just how significant?
Oh, well, now let's see. Silk pretended to consider the matter.
Naturally, I'd have to abandon all of my enterprises in the kingdoms of the West.
If the Aelorn kings declare me an outlaw, all of my assets would be expropriated anyway. My commercial ventures are far-flung, and it's going to take some time to establish their fair value. And then, of course, I'll have the expense of setting up operations in a part of the world where the Aelorns can't track me down.
That is simplicity in itself, Geldar. Come to Tol Morgos, I would protect you.
Oh, no offense, Your Majesty, but
Tol Morgos doesn't suit me.
I was thinking perhaps of Melzef, or maybe Melsine. I could probably do quite well in Melsine.
Selk, Belgorath said abruptly, what is the point of all of this?
I was just...
I know what you were doing. You can amuse yourself some other time. Right now, we have got a ship to catch.
But, Belg... Silk caught himself abruptly, with a quick sidelong glance at Urgot.
You are not in a position to be giving orders, old man, the Murgo King said.
Then he looked around suspiciously.
There is something going on here that I don't like. I don't think anybody's going any place today. I'm not going to turn any of you loose until I get to the bottom of all of this.
Don't be absurd, Urgot,
his mother interrupted him.
These people must leave at once.
Don't interfere, mother.
Then stop acting like a child. Tzadi must get past Raktaha before the fighting starts there. And Keldar must be on his way to Belgarion within the hour. Don't throw away this opportunity out of sheer pique.
Their eyes locked. Urgot's face was suddenly angry and his mother's unrelenting. After a long moment, his eyes dropped.
This isn't like you, mother. Why are you deliberately trying to humiliate me in public?
I'm not, Urgot. I'm just trying to bring you to your senses. A king must always bow to reality, even if it injures his pride.
He gave her a long, penetrating look.
The time isn't really all that pressing, mother. Tzadi has time to spare, and Keldar really doesn't have to leave for a day or so. If I don't know better, I would say that you have some personal reason for not wanting me to talk to them anymore.
Nonsense!
But her face had grown quite pale.
You are upset, mother. Why is that?
She can't tell you, Arion said suddenly. The young man was seated on a bench in front of a nearby window, with the autumn sun streaming golden on his pale hair.
What?
Your mother can't tell you, Arion repeated. There's a secret she's had locked in her heart since before you were born.
No,
Lady Thomason gasped involuntarily.
You mustn't.
What is this secret?
Urgot demanded, his eyes flickering suspiciously from face to face. A slow flush crept up Arion's cheeks.
I'd really rather not say,
he replied, in a slightly embarrassed tone. Velvet had been watching the exchange with wholly absorbed fascination. Even as a startling suspicion dawned in Geryon's mind, she suddenly began to laugh.
What's so funny, young lady?
Urgot asked irritably.
A peculiar thought just occurred to me, Your Majesty,
she replied. She turned to Lady Tamazin.
Didn't you say that you knew Prince Keldar's father, my lady?
Tamazin's chin lifted suddenly. Her face was still deadly pale, and she did not answer.
How long ago would you say that was?
Velvet asked. Tamazin's lips remained tightly closed. Velvet sighed, then looked at Silk.
Keldar, she said. Quite a long time back, your father visited Rakoska, didn't he? I think it had something to do with some trade negotiations on behalf of King Rodar. Do you happen to recall just how many years ago that was?
He looked puzzled.
I don't know. Oh, it must have been... He thought about it.
I remember that my mother and I stayed at the palace in Boktor while he was gone. I think I was 8 or so at the time. That would make it about 40 years, I guess. What is this all about, Lysel?
Interesting, she murmured, ignoring his question. My Lady Tamazin, she said, you keep telling your son that he is not going to go mad.
But doesn't every male in the Urga line fall prey to that hereditary affliction? What is it that makes you so positive that he's somehow going to escape the family curse?
Temizin's face grew even paler, and her lips were resolutely sealed.
My Lord High Seneschal,
Velvet said to Ascatad,
just out of curiosity, how old is His Majesty?
Oscatet's face had also gone deadly pale. He looked at Lady Tamazin with a stricken expression, and then his lips also clamped shut.
I am 39, Urgot snapped. What difference does it...
Then he suddenly stopped, his eyes going very wide. He turned with a look of stunned incredulity.
Mother,
he gasped. Tsadi began to laugh.
I just adore happy endings, don't you?
Velvet said brightly to Tenedra. She looked impishly at Silk.
Well? Don't just sit there, Geldar. Go, embrace your brother.
The Lady Tamazin rose slowly from her chair, her face proud.
Summon the executioner, Oscutat. I am ready.
No, my lady. I won't do that.
It is the law, Oscutat. A Murgo woman who dishonors her husband is to be put to death immediately.
Oh, sit down, mother,
Urgot said, abstractedly gnawing at one of his knuckles.
This is no time for histrionics.
Silk's eyes were a bit wild.
You're very quick, Lysel,
he said with a strained voice.
Not really. I should have guessed quite some time ago. You and His Majesty could almost use each other for shaving mirrors. And he negotiates almost as shrewdly as you do.
She looked at the stunned Murgo King, her cheeks dimpling.
If your Majesty ever grows weary of the throne, I am certain that my uncle could find work for you.
This alters things quite a bit, Urgot, Belgarath said. The prejudices of your subjects are well known. If they find out that you are not a real Murgo, it might agitate them just a bit, wouldn't you say?
Urgot had been staring at Silk.
Oh, just shut up, old man, he said absently. Let me think my way through this.
I am sure that your majesty realizes that you can rely totally on our discretion,
Zadie said smoothly.
Of course, Urgot replied dryly. Just as long as I do exactly what you tell me to do.
Well, there's that, naturally.
Urgot looked at his seneschal.
Well, Oscatat, will you now dash to the highest window of the Drojum to proclaim this to the entire city?
Why should I? Oscatat shrugged. I have known since you were a little boy that you were not the son of Tar Urgas.
Lady Tamazin gasped, her hand going suddenly to her lips.
You have known, Oscatat? And you have kept my shame a secret?
My lady, he said with a stiff bow, I would not have betrayed you, even on the rack.
She gave him a peculiar look.
And why is that, Oscatat?
She asked him gently.
You are of the House of Haga, as am I. Loyalty to blood is very strong in Tol Murgos.
And is that all, Oscatat? Is that the only reason you befriended me and protected my son?
He looked her full in the face.
No, my lady. It is not, he said almost proudly.
She lowered her eyelashes.
There were other reasons for my keeping your secret, however. Less personal, perhaps, but just as compelling. The Urga dynasty has brought Tol Murgos to the brink of disaster. I saw in young Urgot the best hope for the kingdom. I might have wished him to be stronger, but his agility of mind showed much promise. In the long run, a clever king is often preferable to a strong one without any brains.
Belgaroth rose from his chair.
I hate to break up these festivities, but it is time for us to leave. Too many secrets are starting to come out into the open.
He looked at Urgot.
Did you send that messenger to the temple? If Agachak's Dagashi wants to go along with us, he's going to have to get down to the harbor at once.
Urgot started to rise from his chair, his face angry. Then he stopped, his eyes narrowing.
"Just who are you, old man? You look like a vagabond, but you have been throwing commands around here like an emperor."
Lady Thomason, however, had been looking at Belgarath with eyes suddenly gone wide. Then she turned to stare in awe at Aunt Paul.
"Urquhart,"
she said in a half-strangled whisper.
"What is it, mother?" "Look at him. Look very closely. Then look at his daughter here." "His daughter? I didn't know they were related." "Neither did I, until just now."
The Queen Mother looked directly at Polgara.
"He is your father, isn't he, Lady Polgara?"
Polgara straightened, and the white lock at her brow caught the candlelight. "I think this has gone far enough, father," she said to the old man, with a wry expression. "There's not much point in trying to hide things any more, is there?"
"Old friend," Silk said lightly, "you really ought to do something about your appearance, you know. Your description has been noised about the world for all of these centuries, so people are bound to recognize you every so often. Have you ever considered shaving off your beard?"
Urquhart was staring at the old man with an expression of near terror.
"Oh, don't do that," Belgarath said in disgust.
Urquhart flinched.
"And don't do that either. No matter what you've been told, I don't make a practice of biting off the heads of Murgo babies just for amusement."
He tugged thoughtfully at one ear, looking first at Urquhart, then at Lady Thomason, and finally at Oscatat and Prala.
"I think there's going to have to be a small change of plans. I believe that you people are all going to develop an irresistible craving for sea travel, just as a precaution. You have some secrets you want to keep, and so do we. This way we can sort of keep an eye on one another."
"You're not serious," Urquhart burst out.
"Yes, as a matter of fact I am. I don't like leaving loose ends behind me."
The door opened, and Geryon spun quickly, but stopped, his hand halfway to his sword hilt. The Murgo officer who had just entered looked curiously at the people in the room, sensing the tension.
"Excuse me, Your Majesty," he said a bit warily.
Urquhart looked at him, a swift flash of hope fleeting across his face. Then he cast a quick, fearful glance at Belgarath.
"Yes, Colonel,"
he replied in a carefully neutral voice.
"A message has just arrived from the Hierarch, Your Majesty. I'm directed to advise you that the Dagashi Kabak will be at the harbor within the hour."
Durnick and Toth, moving in unison, had carefully sidled up until one of them stood on each side of Oskatat, and Polgara had crossed to Lady Tamazin's chair. Urquhart's face was faintly sick with fright.
"Very good, Colonel. Thank you for your trouble."
The officer bowed, then turned toward the door.
"Colonel?"
Prala's clear voice stopped him. He turned back, his face respectful.
"Yes, Princess?"
Velvet was moving toward the Murgo girl with a deceptive casualness. Geryon inwardly flinched at the potential for sudden, awful violence that hung heavily in the air, even as he measured the distance to the unsuspecting colonel.
"Have you had any reports about the weather conditions along the coast to the south?"
Prala asked calmly.
"There's some wind, Your Highness," the colonel replied. "And there are almost always rain squalls around the tip of the peninsula."
"Thank you, Colonel."
He bowed and quietly left the room. Geryon let his breath out explosively.
"Lord Belgarath?"
Prala's voice was crisp now.
"You cannot expose the Lady Thomason to that kind of weather. I will not permit it."
Belgarath blinked.
"Will not permit?" he asked incredulously.
"Absolutely not. If you persist, I will scream the roof down."
She turned coolly to Velvet.
"Don't come one step closer, Lyselle. I can scream at least twice before you can kill me, and that will bring every guard in the Drojum to this room on the run."
"She's right, you know, Father," Polgara said very calmly. "Thomason could not possibly endure the rigors of the voyage."
"Couldn't we?"
"No, Father.
It is absolutely out of the question.
He muttered a sour curse and jerked his head toward Sadi. The two of them moved down to the far end of the room for a brief murmured conversation.
You've got a knife under your doublet, haven't you, Keldar?
Urgot asked. Two, actually. And one in my boot, and another on a string at the back of my neck. I like to be prepared for little emergencies when they arise. But why dwell on unpleasantness that never happened?
You are a dreadful man, Keldar.
Why, no. Belgareth came back from his low-voiced conference with Sadi.
Lady Tamerlan.
The Queen Mother's chin lifted.
Yes?
Under the circumstances, I believe we can rely on your discretion. You've already proved that you know how to keep a secret. You do realize that your life, and your son's, depends on your not revealing what you have learned here, don't you?
Yes, I suppose I do.
We are going to need to leave someone ostensibly in charge here anyway. So things will work out, I suppose.
What you propose is quite impossible, Lord Belgareth.
I do wish people would stop using that word. What's the problem now?
Mogos will not take orders from a woman.
Belgareth grunted sourly.
Oh, yes. I had forgotten about that peculiar Mogo prejudice.
My lord Oscatat, Zadi said.
The seneschal's face was stony as he glanced briefly at Durnik and Toth, standing one on each side of him.
"Wouldn't you be the logical one to attend to the affairs of state during His Majesty's absence?"
"It is possible."
"Just how far does your loyalty to your kinswoman, the Lady Tamerlan, go?"
Oscatat scowled at him.
"Eriand?"
Tenedra said.
"Yes. Can the seneschal be trusted not to send a fleet after us as soon as we leave?"
Geryon looked up sharply. He had forgotten his young friend's peculiar ability to see directly into the minds and hearts of others.
"He won't say anything,"
Eriand replied confidently.
"Are you sure?"
Tenedra asked him.
"Absolutely. He would rather die than betray Tamerlan."
A dull flush crept up into the big Murgo's scarred cheeks. He turned his face so that he could avoid the Queen Mother's eyes.
"All right, then." Belgareth's tone was decisive. "Urgot will go with us."
He looked at the seneschal.
"We will drop him off not far from Rakthaka. You have my word on that.